Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist. This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives.
Yes. Alrighty, so this...
No, you go. No, you're not going to talk? Oh, Keegan is mute now. So this week we are going to talk about children and gender and kind of the different stages from, you know, what children go through even while they're not born yet. What's the word I'm looking at? When they're in utero all the way through teens, how our gender stereotypes affect children and things like
right.
that.
Right, yes.
Wow, kind that was of, like the worst way I could have described
it's
it
It's kind
ever.
Of like gender politics, yeah. right? Like going into the ways in which gender shape who we become throughout our childhood into adulthood.
Thank you for saying that so much more eloquently than me. I'm like, I'm just going to say words and hope that people understand what I'm saying.
We got it.
So I kind of like got this idea for an episode for two reasons. One of them being seeing a lot of gender reveal parties online, and two, being very fascinated by living outside of the pink and blue when we raise our children. And something for me, because I work with children, it's very interesting for me to see how they behave and how they try to conform to certain societal gender constructs. So kind of learning about why that might be, what's affecting that, and how we can be more aware of how we're interacting with our children when it comes to gender, I think is really fascinating.
Yeah. So I would really like to kick off this episode kind of starting with gender reveal parties.
Yes.
Because this is a big part of it for me. Most of my notes are on this topic because I find it so strange. Like, yeah. gender reveal parties are interesting to me because it's like the harder you think about them, the weirder they are.
Well, and I just want to preface it all too with saying what a gender reveal party is. Because gender reveal parties, they do not reveal the gender of a child. They reveal the anatomy
of a child. Yes,
the physical anatomy of a child.
They should be called sex reveal parties because they're not reveal the biological sex of a child.
Yes, and I also just want to say that I am coming at this with a non-judgmental stance. I personally don't like them. They skeeve me out a little bit. I would not have one for myself, but I'm also not judging those who do it.
Right,
I understand the excitement about learning something about your child, getting your friends together. They yes. all want to know more about the child that's coming into the world.
Yeah.
I get that.
I do want to really emphasize that we are not coming from a place of judgment as far as, like, I get it. I understand yeah. that there are so few things that you can actually know yeah. about your child before
you want to know as much as you can.
Yeah. So I understand it, and I'm not shaming anybody who has had gender reveal yeah. parties who want to do that. Again, I'm with you as far as I feel like it is not something that I would do personally for myself for a yeah, variety of reasons.
I feel like I would even have a hard time attending. I feel like
I would go for a friend or a family member yeah. if they invited me.
If it was like a close friend or family member, I think I would. But you know how we always talk about the lines that we
right
draw
yeah they're
for
personal
ourselves.
Lines.
And I think I really think it's because I work with children too that I have a lot of knowledge about that kind of stuff, and I have such a strong ideology of how I raise children that I work with against what I believe in as far as perpetuating stereotypes.
I could see myself attending. I think it would be something that I would not be able to join in with the culture of.
Exactly.
Because a lot of it is rooting team girl, team boy yeah. mentality that I really don't think that I could right. get into.
Well, and I also think that the more facts that people learn about gender, but also about intersex children
right.
and how common it
Absolutely.
Is and the different things that go along with creating a child and creating their sex and what that means. I think that the more people know, the more that they can draw that line for themselves of what
right.
they
and,
want
and it
to
should
do.
Be said that, like, gender reveal parties are a fairly new phenomenon.
Very new, yeah.
They did not really exist before social media. I think that they're very much a social media phenomenon. If you need some clarification as to what gender reveal parties are. Typically, it is a couple will go to the doctor. The doctor will find out the biological sex of a baby. They will write it down, put it in an envelope or something.
Yeah.
Give it back to the parents. The parents will not look at it. They'll give it to a third party, and then the third party will do something with it.
A balloon guy, a cake maker, whatever. And I mean, at first it was like the cake. It was the slicing of the cake.
Right, you open it up, it's either pink or blue on the inside, and it tells you. Now things are getting bananas.
Crazy!
People are doing all kinds of crazy shit.
Have you seen the video where the mom is on the way to the gender reveal party, and she's got, like, other kids running out behind her, and this kid takes, like, a dart or something sharp and just throws it at the balloon, and it, like, blue bursts out, and, like, the security camera catches it. Have you seen that?
No.
Oh, it's so funny, and the mom's just like,
Have you seen the one where the mom dyed her hair and didn't know, like, what the hair dye was?
Oh, God.
So, until, like, you know, the hair dye, like, settled or whatever, and she washed it out, and she's like, oh, my gosh, it's blue. I'm having a boy.
If I were about this, that would be the way that I would go about it.
My God.
I'd be like, dye my hair.
But I'm just like, I get it. I get the excitement. So, I don't want to shame anybody
exactly.
for that.
Exactly. So, we are prefacing with that, but this type of party is really working against the progress that we've really made for gender and excuses for corporations to make more money.
Oh, absolutely.
And most of what we're talking about when it comes to toys, we're going to talk about, you know, pink and blue and how that all started and defining colors to gender. And a lot of that has to do with manufacturers and them wanting to make more money and knowing that this is a niche that they can...
Well, a lot of this stuff is, like, when I was researching this, I was talking to my coworker, and we were talking about, you know, there's the wedding industrial complex, which we all know, which is, like, you can charge $400 more for a photographer when it's a wedding photographer, even though it could be the same photographer who takes other types of pictures, right? Just because the word wedding is associated with it.
Yeah.
And I feel like because of social media...
Have you started experiencing that?
Oh, I mean, of course. Like, any time you look at anything for weddings, like,
it's crazy.
You were to rent out a banquet hall for a party, it would cost different for the same number of people than if you said, hey, I want to rent this out for a wedding.
Yeah, I remember when Arielle was getting married, we had a long discussion about that because she was talking about how... As soon as she mentioned wedding, it was like stars danced.
Oh, God,
their eyes.
Because they know they can charge you so much more.
Yeah.
And so because of social media, I think that started to happen with children.
Uh-huh.
And this entire, it's a money-making machine, right? Like, not only, like, gender reveal parties, but all of these other social media trends that have to do with children.
Yeah.
Specifically, like, and I think that they're cute. Listen, I think that they're cute. Whenever each month, as your child gets older, you're like, 1 month, baby likes spinach and, like, fucking whatever. And they get older and older and, like, you do that every month. And I think that that's very cute. It's a way to track, you know, the way that your kid is growing.
That I will probably be guilty of
doing stuff like that. It's cute. And I think so, too. Yeah. I think that that's one that I actually like. But these trends, because of this, these companies have been able to make and package all these new things that didn't exist 20 years ago.
Yeah.
They can sell kits that are like 1 month up to, you know, one number up to 12 months and a little thing that you can write on.
Yeah.
You know, it's changed the way we look at that
exactly.
stuff.
Well, Carly Geisler, PhD, says we're affixing a label on a child who hasn't even had a chance to enter the world and assume that identity. One in every 1,000 to 1,500 children are born with a visible form of difference of sex development, neither being male or female, which I think is also intersex.
That is intersex. So, yeah, what I had was, according to the United Nations, 1.7% of children born are born with intersex traits, meaning that their genitalia does not fit neatly into a male or female category.
Right. And this statistic that I had, if they say the broader definition of DSD, it puts the statistic in 1 to 100 children, which I found really fascinating. Mm-hmm. So if you think about that, a school of children... How many can have different chromosomes,
right.
have a different level of hormone,
right.
have different genitalia than what they are perceiving to the world?
Right, and that's biology. That's not, because you can sit here all day and say, like, there are only two genders, you know, people who like to make those arguments, even though that's blatantly false. I mean, you can sit here all day and say those things, but you cannot argue that intersex exists and what that means. It is scientific fact.
Yeah.
There is no argument to be had. And these gender reveal parties in general don't allow for that.
Yeah.
They don't allow for a biological fact.
Exactly. And to kind of jump forward to teenagers, 150,000 teens in America identify as transgender.
Mm-hmm.
If I were trans and I were trying to assume the identity for myself that I've always known that I was, and look back on photos of my parents being so happy that I was a girl or, you know, a boy or things like that, it really would take a toll on me in a way. You know what I mean? Because it's like, I feel like, you know, I got a comment after I talked about Marsha P. Johnson, where I said the name that she had before she was Marsha.
Her dead name.
Her dead name. And so I feel like, in a way, it would make me feel like my parents were yearning for what they had still. Does that make sense?
Right, yes.
It would be a painful memory to have.
It does. And I was actually, when I was, you know, looking into this, because gender reveal parties are so largely a social media phenomenon, and we don't know what it is like to have grown up completely having our lives documented literally from our ultrasounds forward on social media.
But I mean, I'm an only child. I've got quite a bit.
But
no, social media and iPhones are completely different.
It did not exist when we were children. So, you know, the day our parents went and got an ultrasound that had a picture of us in utero,
we can't just
that
see
didn't
that.
Go up on social media the day it happened. You know what I mean? And so going forward, there will be a future of children whose lives are completely documented from the time they were conceived, essentially, to the time that they are now.
Yeah.
And they can go back and look at their gender reveal party, Facebook lived.
Yeah.
You know, and see that. And I do wonder what that's going to do, especially as we move into a more gender fluid future. Will it even itself out because everyone will be more gender fluid, or will it still be difficult?
I'm hoping that child will be able to look back and see it as what it was at the time.
Yeah.
And not have that be something that makes them feel lesser than at the time.
Right.
Because it's true. The parties really do celebrate a very binary way of thinking, and we're going to talk a little bit about in like the 40s and 50s when pink and blue for boys and girls really started on the rise. The baby boomers are the ones that they grew up with that,
right?
And we're still kind of edging out of that. And it's interesting because we do live in a world where, you know, you and I talk all the time about gender fluidity and intersectional feminism, where we're in this very knowledgeable world, I feel like, that it's interesting to still to have one little section still be so far back. Like, well, I feel like that would have been really popular back in the 50s if they had had that technology.
It's going to read as very archaic very quickly. I feel like it will not age well.
But the parties, they're allowing the adults to recuperate these ideals and stereotypes of their children.
Well, and there was also something I read about how these traditions, these new traditions that we have implemented, gender reveal parties, things of that nature, is trying to recapture the mysticism of pregnancy, because things have become so clinical.
Yeah.
We can learn the biological sex of a baby in the womb. We can learn all kinds of things. Whereas it used to be you couldn't really learn anything. And there was this kind of mysticism around pregnancy where it was just like, oh, if it's sitting high, it's a boy. If it's sitting low, it's a girl, or whatever. That doesn't exist anymore. So there is a theory that these like gender reveal parties where you get all of your loved ones together and develop this like tribe or community and do this
thing,
it revives this like mysticism, this magic of pregnancy, which I get. I understand it.
I was gonna say, I totally get that. For me, when I get pregnant one day or when I decide to have a baby, I think that I would leave the knowledge of the sex to my baby daddy, me, maybe like our close intimate family. I don't want to have a baby shower that's full of pink and glitter and tutus for a girl. And I don't want to have a baby shower if it's a boy full of trucks and whatever and sports.
I don't think I would want to know. I don't think I want to know. I think
and there is a part of me that doesn't want to know. But then there's also, like I said in the beginning, you want to know as much as you can about this child because you love them and you're excited.
I totally understand that. But for me, like, maintaining the mysticism of pregnancy and that kind of magic of pregnancy is, for me personally, not knowing. I think
maybe
that, like,
I would start out not knowing, but I feel like knowing myself in 2 hours, I'd be like, doctor, tell me.
And I also
to know.
I also think that there's absolutely nothing wrong
with
wanting to find out the biological sex of your child. It has nothing.
But I feel like what we just said is what you just said is what's important. You're figuring out the biological sex of your child. It's important for us to not make assumptions of who this child is going to be in the future based on their anatomy.
Right. So with that said, there was a Huffington Post article where a woman named Marty Seroy.
I read about her.
Yeah, she's a mother and a therapist who works with parents of transgendered kids.
Uh-huh.
And she wrote, children will reveal their own gender identity and or expression at some point along the way, whether that is cisgendered, gender nonconforming, gender created, agendered, gender fluid, or gender queer. And that gender is totally separate from romantic or sexual attraction.
Yep.
There are essentially like three varying factors that make them up as like a human being in that sense.
Okay.
And that's gender identity, gender expression, and sexual attraction. And they're three important but separate things that your child will eventually express on their own.
But what we're also going to talk about is how difficult it is in society because of peer groups, stereotypes, and peer pressure.
Well, right, because
for children to discover that at a young age.
So you having a gender reveal party could affect their comfortability.
Yes.
Right? In being able to express that to you. They're going to come to this conclusion on their own one way or another.
Yeah.
So the only thing that you're doing by having, by pushing these gender stereotypes on them is making it potentially more difficult.
Agreed.
For them to come forward and talk to you about this.
Yeah.
And again, finding out the biological sex of your child isn't a big deal if you want to do that, but just keep in mind that there are other factors and all the other factors are separate from each other.
Exactly.
Because you could be trans and still be, you know, I know a lot of people talk about how Caitlyn Jenner is now with a woman.
Yeah.
And they're just like,
oh,
I don't understand.
Yeah.
And they like don't understand it.
Because your gender doesn't change your sexuality.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to start getting into a little bit of the pink and blue, and we can still revert back to any of your notes that you have on gender reveal parties. So in the late 1800s, both boys and girls actually wore white dresses for two reasons, because dresses are easy to just hike up, change a diaper, and for the inevitable exploding diaper, which I've seen too
many
of.
We've not all experienced it, but if you've worked with small children, you've experienced
it. The white clothing was easy to bleach and clean and then just put it back on. Everything's good. Also, at the time, color fabrics were not easy to be cleaned and keep color. So for a baby, you're not going to want to color because you're going to be washing it so often, things like that. So it was very practical. And it was all white. So originally, pink was seen as a stronger and more masculine color, while blue was seen as being dainty. Now, I told the 6-year-old yesterday this, and he had such a reaction. Don't tell me that. Don't tell me that. That's disgusting. Don't tell me that. Because he's revolted by pink. Revolted by pink. And I'm like, you can't gender color. I just like screamed at him after.
But we have.
But like we that, have. I know.
It's
but
so strange. I remember when we were in middle school and high school, there was an entire thing where that was the time of the metrosexual, right? Like the early 2000s was the time when we created this idea. It was before we were all kind of like gender fluid and sexually fluid.
Yeah, the metrosexual was a straight guy who still, you know.
Got manicures, liked to get facials, did things that were traditionally feminine. And we were kind of, it was like the queer eye guy, right?
Yeah.
It was like a straight guy who, you know, liked to take care of himself, essentially.
Basically.
And we called that a metrosexual.
Yeah.
And at the time of the metrosexual, just so stupid. Looking back, it's so dumb.
Yeah.
There was this whole trend of real men wear pink. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Because it was trying to, like, I'm so secure in my sexuality that I can wear this girly color. So, like, we've gendered these colors.
We have, and I know, but for me, stop gendering colors. That's my
mind. It's so dumb.
You know, especially for a young boy.
It doesn't make sense.
Stop, don't do this. So actually, there was an article in Ladies Home Journal in 1918 that said, the generally accepted rule is pink is for boys, blue for girls. The reason being that pink is a more decided and stronger color for the boys, while blue, which is more delicate and dainty, is prettier for the girl. But later, they also said, that blue was more flattering for blondes, pink was more flattering for brunettes, blue was more flattering for blue eyes, and pink for brown eyes, which is like a weird baby stylist kind of thing where it's like you want to make your little infant look their best.
You want her to be a hot baby? Like... You want a sexy baby?
In Friends, where she's like, I'm going to be a baby stylist.
Oh, my God. Okay. Weird.
But what's interesting is that there is a theory that's gone around that I've heard about a million times that I want to look into with this episode, that Hitler feminized pink. So this, have you never heard this?
No.
Oh my gosh, I've heard it so many times before. So back in World War II, you would wear, obviously we know that Jewish people would wear the yellow star.
Mm-hmm.
There were also different color identifications that different people would have to wear. Green was associated with like a political criminal. Purple was associated with a Jehovah's Witness. And a pink triangle was associated with the homosexuals, which I know is not a politically correct term today. That's what it was called back then. So some people say that because he chose for that to be pink, that in turn feminized it. But we also don't see green as criminal. You know, we do see it in a lot of villains and things like that. But you don't look at purple and think of a Jehovah's Witness.
I think it's interesting the things that stick. It's always like that. There are just like a few things in society that will like cling and stick.
Well, because
and
there's also, fact to it, but it doesn't mean that that's the reason that it was feminized.
But I think it also possibly goes to speak to our hyper-masculinity, toxic masculinity culture, that maybe the reason why once pink was associated with homosexuals or feminized, that these like hyper-masculine, toxic masculinity bros were just like, oh no, it will forever be associated with that and like no homo, where they don't have the same problem with Jehovah's Witnesses or criminals necessarily,
that
so
makes
it won't
sense.
Cling to them.
Yeah, I feel like there could be some truth to it, but I don't think that's the base reason for it. In the 40s is when manufacturers settled that pink would be for girls and blue would be for boys. And like I said earlier, baby boomers were raised as such.
Why though?
I don't know.
Like, do we know why?
I couldn't find it, but I mean, maybe at the time suddenly it changed their minds. I don't know. I didn't say, and nothing that I read explained why. I just know that it shifted. In the 70s during the women's liberation, unisex baby clothes got really, really popular, but then pink and blue came back during the 80s. So,
shocking.
Yeah, right? So,
of course it came back during the 80s.
Yeah, this was really big for manufacturers because if a family already had a son, they bought everything blue. The whole nursery was blue. It was blue clothes, blue everything. Well, what if their next child is a daughter?
Oh, right. You got
to
repaint everything.
All new stuff. They had to get everything new. So this was a really big way for, I feel like this is probably like the birth of like this baby buying culture where everybody is like, it has to be so gender specific, you know?
Right. Well, yeah. We live in a capitalist society and to make money, that makes sense. They're going to do what they need to do to make money. It's very similar to like the beauty industry. It's like they're going to play on your insecurities to get you to buy money.
Exactly.
Or to buy money, to buy products.
I want
to
buy money.
I would love to buy money.
Can I give you a dollar for 100?
Yeah.
That'd be great. Thanks.
So
another way that this is really implemented is with the toys that we give our children. And it was really interesting for me to read some of like the research and biology behind that. Research says that it is not as easy as switching toys for your child, because for me in my mind I'm like, well, just give your child both things, give them a baby doll and a truck, you know, like let them choose what they want to do. But some studies are saying that children are very perceptive at a very young age about
absolutely
different things. They'll turn their like little girls will make their trucks be a family and little boys will start banging their heads dolls against the wall, you know, or using them as guns, you know, different things like that. So there are some arguments that a lot of it is biological. I feel like if there is a biological aspect to it, that it would be more of an evolutionary biology kind of thing rather than just the way that we are made.
Right. Well, I didn't look into this specifically as far as like finding the actual numbers and statistics on this, but I have heard in the past that kids are very perceptive and from a very young age. And starting with, say, a gender reveal party where you are at that moment where you reveal the biological sex of your child, you're giving your entire tribe, your entire community, everyone who's shown up
the
for your gender,
to bring certain things.
Right. You are now saying, oh, okay, it's a boy. So everyone now knows next time we all get together for the baby shower, we need trucks and tools and
footballs
and blue things and, you know, army trucks and these things. And so we are enforcing this idea on children from the time they are infants.
And that's
so there might be a biological element to some degree as far as
but I feel like a chemical balance.
Yeah, I mean, there could be something, maybe like some kind of, you know, the same way as boys and girls get older, one has more testosterone, things like that.
There might be a little bit of that. I was actually reading a little bit about girls, and I didn't write a lot of this down because I wrote so many notes and I had to condense it all down. But I did read something where there is this thing where girls will have certain chromosomes where their hormones, their biology will tend to be more, quote unquote, boyish. Where that's what we think of as being the tomboy, where mm-hmm. these girls can tend to sway that other way because of their tendencies and the relation to that gender.
Right. But I would be very curious to see if we raised our children in a genderless society. Because
it would be
very
hard.
There are studies that were done, for instance,
you would have
rather
to keep
than
them away from everybody.
Well, no. I know. But I mean, I'm just saying, like, as a for instance, there are studies that have been done where they, instead of referring to them as boys and girls, had people in their class of both genders wear either blue shirts or red shirts, not broken up by gender, just some of you wear blue shirts, some of you wear red shirts, and had the teachers in the classroom then say, instead of ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, say red shirts and blue shirts, reds and blues. And they started dividing themselves and finding commonalities based on whether they were a red or a blue.
That's a really good point.
And attracting that way. And in the same way, if you've ever watched like a video clip of a parent telling their little daughter, "Oh, we found out you're going to have a little brother," and her crying about it, or I cried when I found out my littlest brother was a boy and not a girl because I wanted a sister so badly, because we align ourselves along
into what that means.
Into what that means.
Yeah, exactly.
So it does make me wonder that if we were to be raised in a genderless society, I think some of that biological stuff would stick.
Yeah.
Of course, but I also think so much of it is conditioning.
Right. Well, because of the toys that we give boys and girls, typically preschool age girls are better at locomotor movements and boys excel in object control. Having them play together would really benefit both. And there's this theory that male preference for toys and female preference for toys are mediated by inequities in their visual processing, which claims that males and females are pre-programmed to specialize in certain forms of perception. I don't buy into that, but it's something that I read during my research, so I thought I would bring it up. But I think what you just said makes a lot of sense mm-hmm. because we have pre-programmed everything. And
I think it's going to be impossible for us to know this because there is never going to be. Because
you don't want to isolate your child.
No, it's inhumane, right? Like when you get into any of this nature versus nurture stuff, it's going to be impossible to humanely come to a controlled.
It's going to come down to our society and what we decide as parents for the next generation, what we choose, and hopefully that can evolve into eventually having that be true for our children's children or something like that, you know? So the one thing that all of us want in life, I feel like more than anything, is acceptance from our peers.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that, especially when you're young, you definitely get split into the boys and the girls.
Absolutely.
And the girls want to be accepted by their fellow girls, and the boys want to be accepted by their fellow boys. And that's something that, you know, if a girl, this was really interesting. So if a boy is on the playground playing with a doll, it is more likely for that boy to be physically and verbally harassed by his other boys.
Yeah.
If a girl is seen doing more quote-unquote tomboy things, playing with boy toys, she is more likely to be ignored, which I found interesting mm-hmm. because isn't that so true? Like, I remember being ignored more than I remember being, like, physically yelled at.
Right. No, other girls in general, because I feel like most girls go through a quote-unquote, for lack of a better term, tomboy phase.
Right.
I don't really like that term, you know, but anyway, everyone knows what we mean when we say that.
Yeah.
So I feel like most girls go through a phase like that. I know that I did. And I don't recall ever being physically assaulted.
No, you can't do that.
Right.
Things like that.
But
yeah.
It absolutely would have been true the other way around.
Yeah.
Like for my brother, if he were even to be wearing pink, or like you're talking about tea, and, you know, the idea of the color pink is repulsive. It's
like, yeah, his mom came home with pink nail polish and he was like, ah, take it off. And she's like, no, I just paid for this.
So like, when people want to talk about, like, what is toxic masculinity and where does it come from and how is it detrimental to our boys and men, which I do think we will touch on this episode, but I also think is deserving of its own episode because it's that whole topic, especially right now, is such an interesting conversation.
And I also want to say that I would really like to have a completely separate episode when it comes to transgender.
Oh, absolutely.
Because we are scratching the surface. So I don't want our listeners thinking that we're, like, leaving out a whole section.
This is
a multifaceted discussion.
I feel like
we had to narrow it down.
We have not said this in a while. So as a reminder, we are two cisgendered hetero women.
Yep.
So we are talking about this, you know, in the best way that we know how.
Right.
And we are
in what we've learned.
In what we've learned. Yeah. And, like, we are bound to mess things up. Feel free to call us in on anything that we have said that's incorrect. Write us an email. We have been called out in the past. And I actually am appreciative of it.
I mean, the whole thing talking about dead names, I didn't know what that was.
Right.
Before.
I mean, and even several times I know that we have been called out for this separately and together for saying things like, you guys.
Oh, I always say you
because
guys.
Because it's just, for me, you guys and dudes are interchangeable. Like, everyone is a guy, everyone is a dude. But in doing research for this episode, I also see how using gendered language
can
have negative effects.
No, and since I got that critique, I've checked my language a lot.
Right.
I really have.
It's
going to
slip
I
out.
Don't want, it is. You know, it's something I always go, hey, guys, what's up? You know, things like that. But I do understand where that comes from. And I do want to be a positive change. So I really am trying to use different language. Did you ever have that thing when you were a kid and you were on the playground and you were, like, really good at a sport and it suddenly, like, gave you the acceptance by boys that
you
liked? Oh,
of course. Not like the other girls.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I feel like that plays into it a lot, too, because the girl that's more into the boy, quote unquote, things can then be accepted into another group. She can, like, makeup and dolls with her girlfriends.
Right.
And she can, like, sports and trucks with her guy friends,
right.
You know? So I feel like there's this need for girls to be able to do both. But if you were to flip it over and if a boy were to be like, hey, guys, I'm going to stop kickball for a minute and I'm going to go play
dolls
mm-hmm. with the girls.
He'd
that
be
boy excommunicated. Would be shunned.
Yeah,
they can't do both.
Right.
And I feel like a lot of that, as we're going to get into talking about teens and parenting, fathers tend to be harsher on their sons than their daughters about fitting certain stereotypical roles. They can be hard on their daughters when it comes to more gendered female things, but with things like competitive sports, stuff like that.
Right. I think that there's. In general, I think I agree with you. Most dads, especially, like, in my experience, in, like, Black culture, are a lot softer with their daughters.
Yeah.
And it can cause a lot of damage for sons or boys who are maybe softer.
But I feel like it
boys.
Can also be damaging for girls because it's saying that it's nurturing the fact that they're sensitive, which I think is great. But I also think that it is giving some girls an out into thinking that they are not strong enough to conquer their emotions, to conquer something where it's like, oh, you weren't able to do this.
Well,
that's fine, sweetie.
The most damaging thing that I have seen, as far as, like, a gendered difference between boys and girls is, so we, in Black culture, especially, like, speaking from that perspective, we tend to have a very macho look when it comes to boys, and that can often manifest as being very, like, homophobic and, like, other things like that.
Yeah.
Don't be a sissy, fucking be a man, don't cry, all of those things, quit crying, those things. But for girls, and I feel like this is true not only of Black communities, but all communities, or at least conservative communities, most communities that I've grown up in, we have a different expectation as far as, like, her behavior, act like a lady.
Which, honestly, I feel like I have to tell T all the time, because he is a crier when he doesn't get his way. He doesn't like apologizing. He'll mope. He'll cry. And I'm like, stop crying. I would say it to a girl, too. It's like, you don't need to cry right now. You're fine. Buck up. And it's not a gendered thing. It's that you need to learn that sometimes I'm going to say no. Sometimes you're going to do the wrong thing. And you're going to need to build that thick skin to be able to have a conversation with me like an adult.
Well, we need to allow our boys to cry whenever they're crying over something truly emotional.
Exactly.
But with girls, the detriment that I see mostly for girls that is gendered is we police their bodies and we police their sexual behavior.
Which I, we're going to talk when we talk about teenage girls.
We do not do that with boys. Yeah. So many times, even girls I know, or I shouldn't say girls. That's another gendered language thing. Women.
Yeah.
Because we're not girls, we're women. You know, we don't do that with boys, you know, or men. We don't call them boys.
Yeah.
But even with women, they will say, like, oh, I wouldn't let my daughter go out and sleep around because she can get pregnant, but I don't really care what my son does.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Well, gender role expectations really do start from where we started this episode, from our gender reveal parties. And I want to say what the definition of gender roles is really quick, which are stereotypes that are culturally based, which create expectations for appropriate behaviors for males and females. They are influenced by the media, family, environment, and society. A child's understanding of these roles impact how they socialize with their peers and form relationships. The gender roles encountered in childhood play a large part in shaping an individual's self-concept and influence how they have relationships in life. And paternal influences really are, from the beginning of their lives, the most important thing. And I even look down to the chores that are given to boys rather than girls. If you have, let's say, a son and a daughter, and the daughter is typically given the role of housework, helping with dishes, things like that, and the boys are usually not enforced to do those kinds of things. They're not enforced to clean up. Oh, boys will be boys.
Well,
that kind of
thing. In my household, it was like, girls would be responsible for cooking, cleaning, those kinds of things. Boys would be responsible for taking the trash out or like doing things.
Any sort of heavy lifting.
Yeah.
And that reinforces to then the girls where their places and to the boys where the girls' places as they get older.
Absolutely. And also, you know, whenever you're never encouraged to do anything that requires any amount of physical strength,
you begin to believe it, that you can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so this also, again, goes into your playgroups. A child's peer group serves as a sounding board for what is and is not acceptable way to present themselves. There is a book called Sex Differences in Social Behavior, A Social Role Interpretation. The author, Alice Eagley, says the idea that gender roles are a direct result of one's social interactions. And that, to me, makes me think about kids in LA versus kids in the Midwest versus kids raised in the South.
Mm-hmm.
Just because those are things I know more about than I kind of know a little bit about the East Coast, but not much. I would say that if I were to be raising a child in more of a non-gendered way, that it would be much more difficult to do so in the South or in the Midwest.
Yes, because I think that those cultural norms are wrapped up a lot in
in their culture.
And in a religious culture.
Yeah.
I think that in my experience, at least, California is far less religious.
Well, and I feel like they're also less like we must maintain a history kind of thing.
Right.
They're more willing to move forward.
California is a newer state in general than, you know, the South or Midwest states. And those states, there's a reason why it's called the Bible Belt. You know, it's deeply ingrained in Christian religious culture.
Yeah.
And Christian religious culture is deeply, 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 like, ingrained in gender norms.
Definitely.
Like, those are drilled into you growing up. You know, the fact that that is your husband is your head of household, and you have to default to him. You have to be submissive to him. The women are supposed to be the ones who take care of all of the housework.
For me, it's like I feel, and I don't think it's necessarily a gendered thing, but it's also just more of like me not being used to somebody else taking care of things, but also because I did grow up where my dad didn't clean the house. My mom did it. My mom would take a Saturday a month and she would clean the entire house. It wasn't until I was older and my dad was living on his own at the cabin that he started cleaning. And my mom was like, who are you?
You've been capable of doing this whole time and you haven't.
We've been married 35 years and you're just showing me this now?
And
it's crazy.
I also want to say, if that's what your relationship looks like, and you're a woman, and you take care of the cleaning and the cooking,
and you're okay with that,
and you're fine with that, and that's the way that your relationship operates, because I have friends that, like, that's the way that their relationship operates, and they're very happy with that dynamic, we are not saying that that is wrong. Like, we are not saying that you cannot conform to your quote-unquote traditional gender stereotype.
Yeah, you can wear pink and wear makeup and do the girliest of the girliest things, or be a boy and be rough and tumble and whatever.
Right. Feminism is true, just your ability to choose.
If that is your authentic self,
right,
you can't go wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and if mm-hmm. that's your authentic relationship, you can't go wrong.
Yes.
So this author also calls the gender social behavior gender stereotypic, meaning the expectations of gender come from our stereotypes. She says, as a child explores these things in life that they may enjoy, the acceptance or criticism of their peers is crucial in whether or not they will continue to perform in this activity. And that reminded me being a figure skater growing up.
Mm-hmm.
We had a group of, like, 5 boys that skated when I was, like, a 12 through 16-year-old at the rink that I skated at. And all of them were, like, gung-ho on being, like, I'm a figure skater, but I'm not gay. You know,
you're
it
like,
was this whole
okay.
thing. Well, one of them was totally gay, and he was like, I have a girlfriend, and all this stuff. We're like, okay, Jan, whatever.
That's very true in...
And now he's coaching Jonathan Van Ness from Queer Eye, and he's totally out and proud and wears high heels. And like, yes, you were gay.
It's totally true in musical theater circles as well.
Yeah, it's like... I like this, but I'm macho.
Yeah,
you know?
But just no. I fucking like vagina.
Fuck,
yeah,
fuck,
exactly.
You know? Well, and it's but it was hard for me to see the straight men have to constantly
reinforce
themselves and reinforce it, because I'm like, I get it, you're straight, whatever.
And it shouldn't fucking matter,
it
because
be
why
that
are
way.
We gendering sports? Like, you know, as someone
it's
who was
awful.
A cheerleader as well, like,
yeah.
You know, I was a cheerleader and I was in musical theater, both things that men constantly are having to justify for themselves, when in reality, both, you know, cheerleading, gymnastics, figure skating, dancing, all of these things require a massive amount of, like, physical
skill.
Skill.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, why
but
are we gendering these sports?
But because they've been criticized by their peers. If they are doing something and they love it and somebody says, you shouldn't love that, this is wrong, they're going to feel a certain way. There's this whole thing going around. So I love the dance community. I danced when I was little, but I was never a big part of that or whatever. But there's this little boy who he was on So You Think You Can Dance Juniors, and he was on Dancing with the Stars Junior, and I love him. His name is JT Church, and he's so cute. But he did this whole Instagram post about being bullied for
mm-hmm.
being a boy dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the hashtags was #, I dance with your girlfriend, which I thought was so cute, you know? But also at the same time, it's like you don't have to make it straight. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it can just be what it is.
Again,
I think that's a super cute hashtag, but at the same time, it's like, you don't have to justify it in a way. You can just love dance because you love dance, no matter what your gender is.
And again, like, not only are we headed into a more gender-fluid space, but we're also headed into a more sexually fluid space. Like,
yeah.
Most people fall somewhere on the spectrum.
Yeah.
You know, somewhere on the spectrum between homosexuality and heteronormativity, there's like a lot of shit in between that. And most
yeah.
people don't fall strongly on one side or the other.
Yeah.
Most people fall somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
So for us
or
to
even
make,
just like a step
yeah,
past.
Or maybe a step past or,
yeah.
you know, a step before. You know,
yeah.
it's like people are on this. And I feel like it can also change.
Yeah.
I feel like it can change as you change. And like,
well, and I feel like as a child gets older, they start to see those things and why they're wrong and begin to then be okay with what they like. But when you're a child, it really is your peers that mean so much to you, you know?
Especially, I think it goes into what we were talking about earlier in regards to, yes, women face girls. Face their own set of challenges, but boys in particular. So I'm going to read some statistics. And again, we're going to have another episode completely dedicated to toxic masculinity sometime this year, I think. But boys are more likely to act out. They're more likely to become aggressive when they're young. And we think of them as being bad kids or having some kind of behavioral disorder or something because of their
yeah.
the way that they act out, when in general, that can also be a manifestation of depression. As they get older, they're more likely to experience addiction issues. They're more likely to commit suicide.
Yeah. Which we talked about in the Red Pill episode.
Right. Less than 50% of boys and men will seek help for mental health issues. Every day, 3 or more boys commit suicide in the United States. And respect is often linked to violence in male masculinity, toxic masculinity culture.
Yeah.
You know, they think that, especially in the Black community, I've seen this a lot in Latino communities with, like, machismo culture, where they say, like, don't let anyone disrespect you.
Yeah.
And the way to not let anyone disrespect you is to act out in physical violence.
Exactly. And that's another horrible stereotype that we're perpetuating on our boys, to stand up for yourself with physical violence. And I don't think that that's good for any child. But that, just what you said with the suicide rates reminded me a lot, again, in what I was talking about with figure skating. There's this guy, Joe, that I grew up with. He was gay. He was very good friends with another gay skater friend of mine named Brian. And there's not a whole lot of boys in skating. So if there's boys in your state that skate, you kind of know all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And word got around, he had committed suicide. And word had gotten around after he passed away that the reason that he committed suicide was because he had told his father that he was gay. Mm-hmm. It was Thanksgiving. He couldn't handle it, and he jumped off a bridge. And it was in a national skating magazine, mm-hmm. his story. And that made me feel good that they weren't shying away from what happened and the reasons why.
Right.
And that was shocking to me. I mean, not shocking, but, like, the fact that it was someone that I, like, knew about and had heard about and seen compete and skate, and mm-hmm. I had a friend who knew him and that whole thing. I was, like, 12 or 13 years old, and that deeply impacted me and kind of lit a fire in me where I'm like, that's not okay. Nobody should go toward killing themselves because of who they are and who they love.
Right. Well, I mean, and so much of that, since we're talking about gender on this episode, not necessarily sexuality, although I think, you know, the two oftentimes go hand in hand, the reason, I think we need to really examine the reason why we are so homophobic as a culture, and especially why men are so homophobic. You know, fathers are so homophobic towards their gay sons.
Yeah.
And I think so much of it has to do with what we tell our boys and, like, how we raise them to be, quote unquote, men. We tell them all the time to, like, man up, right?
Toughen up.
And we don't admire things that are traditionally feminine.
Yeah.
Like, that fall within the gender spectrum of, like, femininity.
Yeah.
Or what we determine to be feminine. So if we don't respect that, if we don't respect women, essentially.
Yeah.
We cannot respect these things
that are feminine
that we determine to be feminine in our boys, which oftentimes is interpreted as homosexual. You know, it's all tied up together. And yes, that's all very flawed. And it's not my belief. It's just the perception.
Exactly. Well, and what's interesting to me, too, is that children are also very aware of when others around them are bending the gender stereotypes. Like, there's a kid in T's class who has long hair. I thought they were a girl. They dressed very, like, boyish and things like that. But I was like, oh, it's just a quote-unquote tomboyish girl. Maybe mm-hmm. that's my own limitations being able to see it. And he's like, that's a boy. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. But I've also heard a lot of talk where it's like, why would you let your son grow their hair out? It makes it so difficult to tell who they are. And that, to me, is upsetting, because if your son wants to grow out their hair,
what I think is upsetting is the emphasis that we have. I think we as a culture need to, going back to kind of like gender reveal parties, we need to kind of put an example or put, we need to try and understand, put a microscope on why it's so important to us. Like, why does it matter to us? Like, why
do we need to know?
Why do we need to know? Why does the emphasis exist at all? Like, because I remember my mom would always say that my older brother was a beautiful baby. He truly was. He had he still has super long, curly, thick, dark eyelashes. And even though he was bald, which mom was like, he was bald, and people still didn't know that he was a boy because he was so pretty. You know, where she started, like, making him wear bow ties so that people knew.
Or they'll glue a bow in a girl's bald head.
Right, so that you know that it's a girl. And it's kind of like, but why? Like, what is so offensive
about not knowing? Yeah.
Or about calling a little girl a boy.
Yeah.
Or calling a little
boy
a girl.
There's nothing offensive about it. There's nothing offensive about it. Because there's no reason to. Mm-hmm. One is not better than the other.
Literally no difference.
Yeah.
And calling them a boy or a girl, you don't, again, you don't know their gender.
Yeah.
You cannot determine that.
Yeah. And again, that might have been my bad for assuming. You know, I'm still in, I grew up in that world where everything was more black and white, more pink and blue.
I don't think there's anything wrong with assuming. I mean, we see people all the time and we're usually able to kind of like make that call mentally.
Yeah.
What matters is what you do once you have the information. Like that's all it is. And with a child, it's like, again, you've got T telling you that's a boy, but in general, we don't know. We don't know his gender.
Exactly. Exactly. So we're getting close to an hour here. So let's talk a little bit about teenagers. So I wrote a few bullet points here that we can talk about, such as dress code for boys and girls, how it differs. I went to a very, 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 very Catholic middle school. And if boys had hair that touched their ears, the science teacher would give them haircuts.
What?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I'd be so fucking furious if someone touched
my kid's hair. This guy, Andy, would always grow his hair out to, like, his collarbones over the summer. And then you'd have to get, like, a buzz cut right before school every
year. I would be furious if someone touched my boy's hair.
Yeah.
Like, seriously.
Yeah, because it's not their fucking right.
No.
It's not their right at all. And I remember being, I remember he got a haircut from the science teacher one day, and he was crying. And I felt such rage. And I was like, that's not okay.
It just doesn't make sense either. It's just like, it does not make sense. Like, the length of your hair has no bearing on your sexuality.
Well, and it's like, I'm wondering, like, is that what they were, because I was young. It's like, is that what they were getting at? Or did they,
I don't know.
What's the reason?
Like,
it's just so bizarre. And then with girls, we have such a strict dress code about, you know, how many fingers width is your strap?
How long are your shorts?
How long are your shorts and your skirts and your uniforms? Things like that. Where we have this weird modesty thing with women that is so fucked up. And that goes into more than just school. It's a lot of times, like you said, I would never let my daughter go out of the house like that.
Right.
My mom was chastised a lot because I dressed much older when I was little. I remember wearing like a tube top and a denim miniskirt to a wedding, but it was a kind of a nicer denim miniskirt. And I was like, I'm super cute. Oh, no, it was gaucho pants. It was black gaucho pants. But I was wearing, like, a bedazzled tube top. And people were, like, chastising my mother for it. To my
may have been more because it was a wedding. wore a tube top to a wedding, Keegan.
It was the 2000s, Keegan. It was pretty. It was bedazzled, Keegan. And then I remember to my grandma's funeral, I wore... It wasn't, like, a mini skirt, but it was, like, a black skirt that went, like, mid-thigh. And then I had this sweater from Abercrombie that cut up higher, but I wore a tank top under it. And it just kind of went off the shoulder. Like, not really. It was kind of, like, on the edges of my shoulder bones. And I remember my aunt going up to me and my mom and saying, do you really think that's acceptable right now? And, like, I was completely covered. Like, there was nothing wrong with it. And I wore a lot of things back then that I commend my mom for never hypersexualizing because I was a young girl and gave me the ability to wear what I wanted to wear and express myself in the way that I wanted to express myself without, I mean, I wore super short shorts. Like, I wore booty shorts in high school and when I was younger because I thought I looked cute.
Yeah.
Whatever. And I was used to wearing little short skirts for skating and stuff. So I was like, fuck it. I'm like, I don't need to be super covered up. But there were so many other people around me that had such a weirdness about what I wore at such a young age. I had a shirt. We've talked about where I had a shirt that said hottie and my coach didn't want me to wear the hottie shirt. You
right.
know?
I mean, for me, I think, again, as a parent, I think you make whatever calls you feel necessary. I think a lot of parents, it's less about hypersexualizing their children and more about a fear of their children being around predators, I think is more of a, what a lot of that is. But
you shouldn't put the focus on the child. It should be the focus on
the danger outside of that. And I think for me, when talking about like gendering that, it's that we put so much pressure on girls that does not get placed on boys. I think that that's the issue to me is that like, we put the onus on the woman so often, or the girl so often.
When a girl wears a bikini for the first time, where boys have been shirtless their whole
lives,
you know?
And what are you telling boys? Like, what are you telling boys? You're telling them that it's okay to not be able to control themselves around girls when they don't wear clothes because it's their fault.
And then they're creating future predators.
Right,
exactly.
Here's
the problem.
Yeah.
It's so messed up. Something that I found interesting about my life with my dating life, how my dad reacted and how my mom reacted to my dating life. My father is the most awkward human being on the planet, so he, of course, never had any real conversations with me about my dating life. But men, fathers tend to be very grossed out by their daughter's sexuality, by the fact that they're starting to date. Mm-hmm. They get very protective. But then with their sons, it's like, yeah, go get them, son. Like,
yeah,
go get
crack the open a beer with you. Yeah.
And that was the other thing. How we treat girls who party in high school, how we treat boys who party in high school. A girl that drinks too much, a boy that drinks too much. We have these expectations on girls and boys because we are telling our girls that it's their responsibility to keep the boys in line.
Right, yeah.
And when they drop their guard,
themselves.
They can't. And when they drop their guard with their clothes, with their drinking, with who they're dating, they are at fault.
Right.
And that's really messed up. And it's something that I feel like parents don't even understand they're doing when they're behaving certain ways. Like my mom, I would have my boyfriend in high school over all the time. I was not sexually active in high school at all. I think my dad thought that I was sleeping around or something. Because my mom, like the door would be closed. We'd be in the TV room hanging out. My dad would like knock open the door like every 10 minutes. And I'm like, what do you think I'm doing in here?
Right. I mean, and I disagree with it completely. I understand how a parent, especially a parent who is from, like, the baby boomer generation, can be like, well, we don't want to get these girls in trouble because these boys can just leave. Yeah. And where the woman is usually the one who's ending up saddled with the responsibility.
Yeah.
So they feel
like... I was
like,
always the one that broke up with the boys.
Right. But, no, I mean, like, what I mean is, like, they don't want to get you in trouble, meaning they don't want to get you pregnant because the boy can just leave.
And
the girl is stuck with the responsibility.
But
so I think they put the pressure on girls way more because they know that the girl is the one who's going to be saddled with that responsibility.
But do you want a solution to that problem? Talk to your child openly.
And talk to your sons.
And talk to your sons openly. Because for me, if my dad had had one conversation about me, about my dating life or my... I mean, it would have been weird because my dad had never talked to me about anything personal. So I would have been like, I'm not talking to you. But if that was a relationship that we had... And he knew who I was, where I stood on my sexuality, where I stood with my dating life, what boundaries I'd set for myself with the guy that I was with. Mm-hmm. I feel like there wouldn't have been as much of an issue.
Well,
and I feel like that's what's important. If there is a line of communication that is accepting and open and that you're able to not feel like you need to, like, police your daughter's sexuality, that it would be a little bit different.
It's also a very weird thing because... fathers and men in general, you always hear fathers say, right, like when their girls are young, they'll be like, I'm not letting my little girl date until she's 30 because men are shitty and dangerous.
Well, then raise your boys
and then,
better.
And then whenever you're like, hey, men are shitty and dangerous, they're like, hey, you can't say that about men. And I'm like, well,
you just did.
You raised us to believe that men are predators, that they're always looking to...
And that's our responsibility.
...get something from us, and that it's always our responsibility. But then at the same time, you hate it when we generalize all men this way.
Yeah.
So it's just like, but you raised us
because
to believe
this.
Because
boys can't be trusted. Men.
Right. Yeah. It's so weird and backwards and
well,
twisted.
Well, and that's the thing, is you just have to check yourself. You know, I think that these are good conversations to have now that neither of us have kids, that we can... have as much information as we have, and the more we learn, the more we can know how we want to parent our children, what we want to look out for, what we're looking for in a partner, what our partner should be aware of, and making sure that we are raising children in a way that suits us and in a way that is healthy for that child.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
agree.
I really enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. I realized that we kind of went off in a lot of different directions because this topic is so multifaceted and there are so many issues here.
I wanted to touch on childhood in general.
Right. I'm glad that we touched on all the issues. I think eventually we will have an episode on toxic masculinity in general. I think we will have an episode on modesty and the modesty myth in general and like what that means. But it's good to see how all of those play in together with this idea of gender. And I really, really hope that we are moving into a more gender fluid society.
Right.
I really hope that we can put less pressure on our children to be XYZ and kind
conform.
Of allow them to grow into who they are, whatever that means. And if that looks like a traditional gender role, to go ahead and nurture that. If it doesn't, to nurture that as well.
Yeah.
And I think we are. I think we are moving in that direction.
Yeah, at least in the bubble that we're in.
Well, and I think we're in a very weird time right now where we're moving in that direction, but we're also stuck in this, like, social media posturing.
Yeah.
Where we're, like...
And the Trump world.
Yeah, it's a lot happening right now.
It is. So I really, really enjoyed this. For any of our listeners who have experienced any of this stuff, I really, really want to hear from you. We really want to hear from you. Any of our trans listeners, any of our gender fluid listeners, anything like that. If there's any stories you want to share, we want to share those stories with everybody listening. They're so important. It's so important for us to learn more and more so that we can further discuss and educate people who are listening in a proper way. We don't want to be saying the wrong things.
Right. And if we did say something wrong, we're happy to correct ourselves on a future
episode.
Please
be nice.
We always like to say instead of calling us out, which sounds very aggressive, call us in. Let us know because it's not for lack of wanting the knowledge and education.
Right. We have the best of intentions.
Yeah. So, but that's not to say that we get everything right 100% of the time.
Exactly.
We don't. So if you know something we don't know, point us towards a source, point us towards a study that we can read up
on. Tell us a story about yourself, anything like that. Like, we really do appreciate it because that's the whole point of this, is for us to learn new things and for the people listening to learn new things.
Yeah.
So if you have any of those stories, if you have sister solidarity stories, motherhood stories, coming out stories, anything that you want to share with us, ideas for episodes, shoot us an email at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com. DM us and follow us on Instagram at @angryneighborhoodfeminist. Check out our Twitter, which we're going to try to be better at. I swear I mean it this time. It's at YANF Podcast, YANF Podcast. Thank you for harmonizing with me this time. We've got a business page and a group page on Facebook. Go ahead and check it out. Talk with your fellow ragers. It would be great. We love seeing it. We are on the, I can't remember what it's called again, the Indie List to Watch on Radio Public?
I think so.
Something like that. So thank you guys for listening on Radio Public. And if you don't already, please do it. It really helps us so much and we really appreciate it. The other thing that helps us so much is by rating, reviewing, and subscribing on iTunes. It really does make a difference. We really appreciate it. You will be featured on Reviews Day Tuesday on Instagram. We really, really like it. So thank you.
Yeah.
Keegan, when is your live show for My Worst Date?
Oh my gosh, coming up so soon. So if you want to come see me do a live show for my other podcast, My Worst Date, that is February 8th and 9th at the Actors Workout Studio in North Hollywood. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have wine in the lobby. There's going to be some giveaways. So we're going to have a really good time. So if you're in the LA area and that's something that you would be interested in, definitely come on out. You can find tickets or you can listen to that podcast on our website, myworststatepodcast.com.
Sweet.
Yeah.
So you guys, with all of that being said, we encourage you
to rage on.
Bye.